the sacrifice that is actually recommended is the Hare Krishna mantra chanting, mm-hmm. because there is no need for such things, because the situation is so degraded, you know. For example, the great kings, you know, great kings, emperors of the world, sometimes they had to do these sacrifices in order to purify themselves, because these sacrifices were supposed to cleanse them and to give them a lot of power. Don't ask me exactly how this, but it's like this, you know. This, if you read the Mahabharata or like that, or other different Vedic literatures, you can actually see how different kings were performing these sacrifices, you know. So, because the Vedic literatures recommend many things, there are many prescriptions for different things that are given in the Vedas, because the Vedas are very wide, you know. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came 500 years ago, and he said there is no need to all these things, you know. Just chant Hare Krishna, you know, and then we purify the heart.
But that's not in the Bhagavad Gita, right? It doesn't say anything about
it. Yes, it does say. It says that...
But according to the Kali Yuga,
It is said in the Bhagavatam, specifically. In the Bhagavatam. You know the Bhagavatam?
Uh-huh.
The Srimad Bhagavatam,
yeah.
Also called Bhagavad Purana.
Exactly.
It's a 12th volume.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So there is
written...
The Krishna book is in the 10th canto. So that is recommended. It's a Sankirtan Yagya.
Okay.
Because Krishna comes in every age, and in this age comes as a devotee, because he was wandering. There are different reasons why he came, you know. Lord Chaitanya, you know Lord Chaitanya?
Mm-hmm.
He's there in the altar with Nityananda. So he came to taste the mellows of Radharani, because he was wondering how is that Radharani enjoys so much, you know, loving me, you know, he's loving me and he's really ecstatic, and I wonder how does it feel. So he came to taste this highest stage of bhakti, you know. Like Mahabhava, for example. Mahabhava is beyond prema. Mahabhava is what Radharani experiences, you know, loving in separation from Krishna, and experiencing so much ecstasy and falling on the floor and all these things, you know. And some scholars, they don't understand what Lord Chaitanya was doing, and he said because he was sometimes had foam in his mouth. So they say that he was a madman, because he was like doing all these ecstatic symptoms, was like a madman, you know, externally, if you didn't know. And a madman with epilepsy. With epilepsy, you know?
Yeah.
I read some scholars, some books you can read. So, yes, it's not easy to recognize who is, but actually we have another book, which is also quite big. This golden book, Chaitanya Charitamrita.
Uh-huh.
And this book was written by Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami. That was around. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was living from 1486 until 1533 or 34. There's a disagreement there. But 48 years. So that. And people were amazed with Chaitanya, you know, Mahaprabhu, and they were wondering, who is this person, you know, and all this, everyone is chanting in ecstasy, falling on the floor, pure love of God, wherever he goes, defeating everyone, and being so merciful, and, you know, everyone chanting, and, you know. So, and even the Kasi was the governor of Bengal, everyone surrendered to him, great scholars in India. You know, this was conquering all directions, was wherever he went. And Jagannath Puri, he was living there for 18 years, because six years was traveling in South India. And everyone was falling onto him, onto his feet, and everyone was enlightened, you know. So they were wondering, who is this person? It's unbelievable. So until it took until Visnadas Kaviraj wrote this Chaitanya Charitamrita, a lot of years. There were many writers, Murari Gupta, Kavi Karnapur, Lord Chandas, like that. So, and then Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami composed this Chaitanya Charitamrita, where actually he makes the theology of, with all these previous writers, saying the final word, you know. So all the theological concepts, and he follows the Goswamis of Vrindavan. The Goswamis of Vrindavan are direct disciples of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he was appointed, he was very old, 100, I think it was 25 years old, and he was trembling, he was almost blind, but still he was appointed to do it, you know. And he said, I don't know how I'm writing, I cannot even see, I cannot even have a steady pulse in my hand to write. But he was empowered. So this empowerment is something that for us, you know, it may be very difficult to understand, because we are not used to this another point, inverted commas, dimension of bhakti. How is this possible, these things happen, you know? Like miracle, you know, something like it's not normal, it goes beyond the range of, you know, normal, what people do, you know, because bhakti is beyond this world, you know, bhakti is something extraordinary, something that Krishna takes control of. You are under the internal potency of the Lord, because the Lord is in your heart. So when he sees that you surrender unto him, you know, that's just it's not that easy to surrender, because we have to give up all these selfish things, you know, pride, ignorance, all these things. So, but in your heart, Krishna sees that you want to surrender, that you really want, and therefore he's giving you this mercy. So, so like this. And there is a different verses. There is one verse in Bhagavad Gita that says that of all sacrifices, I am the chanting of the holy names.
Mm-hmm.
There's one verse you can find.
Mm-hmm.
Now I don't know exactly the location, but probably it should be. We can look for it.
Maybe chapter 10.
That verse also refers to the Kali Yuga. No.
Well, Prabhupada explains in the purport in many, many places that the prescribed method for, this is how I found it, Japa 9:27, 10:25. So Prabhupada explains in many places that
the chanting, the Hare Krishna mantra is a sankirtan, you know, is a prescribed duty for this age.
Mm-hmm.
Many places Prabhupada explains. So it is not that it's explained everywhere. You know, it is not that, because this knowledge is a bit kind of not explicitly explained to everyone, you know. So you must have the interest to know, you know. Of course, we try to distribute to everyone, but you must be really sincere to know about it. And even if you had to explicitly explain everywhere in every page like this, people still wouldn't take it, because this it must be from within the heart, that the avikara, the understanding is given, you know. Like you may read the whole Bhagavad Gita, some people read it and they don't understand anything, because or they take it wrong, because
this is bhakti is only by the mercy. You know, it must be given to you. It's not that you figure it out by your intelligence, because bhakti is beyond the range of the intelligence, it's beyond the range of the mind, the senses. You cannot grasp love by your material blunt senses.
It's about the heart.
Yeah, it's about the heart, and it's about giving yourself to Krishna, and when he's pleased, then automatically he's giving you the mercy. So he chooses. The Lord chooses to who he's giving. He's giving this mercy. You know? So maybe an external scholar or some writer or someone is not having a still. There is one scholar, Dimok, and another steward. They write about Bhagavad Gita, but he and others, and is I don't know, but some of course definitely are from external point of view. And even in India you can find many people, even chanting Hare Krishna, they are actually not really in track according to what we believe is the highest Siddhanta theological understanding, because this is called apasampradayas. Apasampradayas means they're deviated. They deviated, you know, they do wrong things, or even they have sexual things, you know, they think that you should be like Krishna and have the gopis around you and all these degraded activities, you know. So there are many things and many people who don't have the highest understanding. You know, this is what is explained.
Mm-hmm.
Like when Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was a spiritual man, the father of Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati,
mm-hmm.
I mean to say, the father, who was the spiritual master of Prabhupada. So when Bhakti Siddhanta came, Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati, the guru of Prabhupada, he had to defeat so many misconceptions, you know. He was a lion guru, and he was so enlightened, and so it is said that he was a ray of wisdom descended to spread this movement, because Bhakti Vinod was praying to the Lord for a son, you know, with like this, and then when he came, he was so pure that he could see, because a pure devotee can see what is right and what is wrong, you know. You know, it's like if you know a lot of mathematics, like doctoral level, then automatically you can see all the levels from beginning of mathematics up to there. You can understand very clearly everything, what is right, what is wrong. So he could also see, and he was defeating all these misconceptions, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because the tendency is that things get degraded, things get misunderstood, like, for example, Jesus Christ also, you know. Along the centuries are so many things that are maybe wrong, this and that, translations, and politics there in the way, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So many things. So the tendency is that the conditioned soul, we have the tendency to degrade, to fall down. So from time to time, we need somebody pure who comes and sets things right, you know. This happens all like this, always. Even in, for example, in the cities there, I know, because my father was explaining me that his father, my grandfather, I don't want to enter too much in this one. Like, he was explaining to me that if there are many thieves, and the police is not strong enough, the thieves take over. So at some point, the police has to gain the control again, because the tendency is that they proliferate. So in the same way, this bhakti, because it's difficult to follow, it requires sacrifice, it requires, you know, the tendency is to fall into all these pleasures of the world, so like that. So it is needed a pure person to come and, you know, put things in, give the right thing, and explain things properly. So Bhakti Siddhanta created many temples in India, and he also sent Prabhupada, you know, instructed him, and So maybe we have discussion because of Bhaktisiddhanta and not another. So any other question or comment? Yeah, I mean, yes, bhakti is only by bhakti. You know, it's only by bhakti that you can get bhakti. Like only bhakti, it's like this, only bhakti gives bhakti. So, in this verse, we just read today, it's interesting because it says, some learned men declare that all kinds of fruitive activities should be given up as faulty because there's some result that you're expecting from, you know. So they say, no, you have to give this up because you should be like Sanyas, previous verse, that is saying you should renounce all these activities, the results of the practice, to tyaga, renouncing all the results. So some people say like this, but others say that sacrifice, charity, and penance should never be abandoned. And then two verses forward, five, says that they even purify even the great souls. You know? And then it's explained later on what these kinds of different in goodness, passion, and ignorance, how they are a different type. Charity in goodness, charity in ignorance, charity in passion. When should be given out of duty or whatever to the right person, right time, right place. You know, so it's not that any kind of charity is good, because it should be in the spirit of love. And it's not just materially. You may give some charity to someone who's in the street who's gonna misuse maybe the money, maybe not. But still, if it's not using for alcohol, or for, sometimes it happens, you give some charity and the person takes drugs or whatever, or uses the money for smoking or whatever. But still, even if it's the person needs really this bread, you know, it's very good that you're helping someone, but you're helping materially speaking, unless you give full offer to Krishna, which is called prasada. Unless you do that, then actually you are not helping the person to raise above the cycle of birth and death. So that is the idea, that even charity, penance, and sacrifice, we should know how to perform. For example, sacrifice, I'll give a little bit of summary also of this chapter, which explains sacrifice of the body, of the words, and let's see. Okay. Which verse is that? I think it's chapter 17. But for example, it's explained, I cannot find it now, but it's explained that there are austerities, that's what I think probably was before. Austerities of the mind, body, and mind, body, and words. So, for example, words should be beneficial to others, should be pleasing to others, you know, not agitating to others. So this is kind of an austerity that we should perform. And the body means respectful to superiors like the father, the mother, the brahmanas, you know, paying respects to them, you know. So it's a culture, so that everyone goes properly in society. So it's very important to pay respects to the superiors, you know. So in this way the Vedic culture is given, so we can follow properly, and then gradually the society gets elevated to God consciousness, you know. Because if that is not like this, then what happens is that the tendency is to degrade, and you can see, you know, what's the situation. So, but by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, the name of Krishna is so powerful that actually it is compared like a lift, like a lift in a building. There is no need to take the stairs, you know, because all these sacrifices and all these different recommendations given for in the Vedas are like a long staircase that you are, at the end you reach bhakti. But if you have bhakti already, this is like a lift, which is very, very powerful. So by chanting this, the Hare Krishna mantra, especially if you chant with instruments, this is very, very, very powerful. So we're going to chant now in 11 minutes or so. So this is the Sankirtan Yaya. This is the process that is given in this age. No? I think it's 100 times more powerful than chanting by japa. You know japa, mm-hmm. How we chanting in low voice, normally speaking, and this is meditative, but also is meditative the other one, because we are trying to focus on the sound to meditate. But it's very, with instruments, it's really, 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 really powerful. You know? So that's the idea, that we don't need to practice all those sacrifices, because those, for example, animal sacrifices, when you know, when Buddha came up here 500 years before Christ, there were so many animal sacrifices, you know, and there was an abuse of these some kind of concessions. These animal sacrifices are considered concessions of the Vedas, because the Vedas are basically accommodating everyone. So there are animalistic people who has this tendency to, you know, to eat meat or fish or eggs. So there are some concessions in the Vedas so that you are not outside, you know. Like sometimes we hear that the system, so-called system, absorbs every tendency in the world, you know. Like if you're very rebellious against the system, this, like the punkies or anarchists, but the system absorbs that, and in such a way that it does not become a threat, something like that. So, but similarly, you can say it's like analogy to understand that the Vedas actually are so tolerant, are so helpful, that are giving maybe the analysis in the best. They are giving prescriptions for everyone, so nobody is kept outside. Nobody is kept outside. So you want to kill animals? Okay, you can kill, but under these conditions, you have to offer to Krishna or to say Om, to offer to Vishnu or to God if it is impersonal. So something is there. Some authority is there. So you can do under the authority of the Vedas, you know. Even the Muslims, this halal meat. Okay. They are not really, maybe. I want to I don't want to enter in too much into this, but basically what it is that you have to offer up to the Lord. You know? You offer to the Supreme, and in this way the it is proper, you know, it is proper, it's under the prescription, you know. So that is the idea. that the Vedas, the sacrifices of animals are actually allowed because so the person can be elevated, person can be purified, so that one day there is no need of such killing, you know. That's killing. Yeah. So, and there are other sacrifices, like I mentioned before, but that's also good for the animal. But when Buddha came, there were so many killing, and then he said, actually, don't follow the Vedas, just to avoid this killing. Don't follow the Vedas, stop this killing. And he was propagating ahimsa and mercy to the animals and compassion. So, like this. Madhu Gopal Prabhu, any comment or question or anything to say?
That's number three, right?
That's number three, yes.
I was thinking something, but I think I forgot. What were you saying?
We're talking about the Vedas and the animal sacrifices and the Sankirtan Yajna. That is recommended for this age. Well, basically, he's talking about this. Basically, that the animal sacrifices are not recommended in this age because it's a Sankirtan Yajna. So, that I mentioned. Yes?
Yeah, so, two things on this thing is that what I understand from the Vedas is that these yajnas, big fire sacrifices, with gold and ghee and all kinds of things. I don't know exactly how, but because it's a very long time ago, like thousands of years ago. And they would sometimes put animals in the fire to test if the fire was sacred or spiritual and potent. And then the animals would, I don't know exactly how it worked, but I think they would come out in a new body. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't it like
something like this, yes.
So they would offer animals, and if the fire was spiritually potent, then the animal would come in a new body.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it would die if it wasn't spiritually potent. So it was kind of tested. So they didn't really, it was my understanding, they didn't really sacrifice animals. And another thing that Prabhupada says that only in general, also in Kalyuga, only low-class people are allowed to eat animals. And then only generally goats, or sheep, I guess, and pigs. So any other, or dogs. So any other animal is really not allowed, like in England, maybe you know that, you're not allowed to slaughter horses. Because
mm-hmm.
they respect the horse. They gamble on it, and you have like old homes for horses. And so they respect it. Unfortunately, they don't respect the cow. But at least they have the consciousness that this is a higher animal and we don't kill it.
Mm-hmm.
So that consciousness was very much there in the Vedic culture. So they would actually never actually sacrifice animals. So this was only done to test it. Right?
Perfect, thank you.
Yeah, and then one last point is about this prasadam. Is that sometimes, how it's also explained, is that God owns everything. So if you ask his permission, or in other words, you offer it to him, then he can, as they say in the Christian philosophy, he can absolve you of the sins. Because
mm-hmm.
he owns, let's say, an apple, he owns the apple tree. So that apple is supposed to be another tree, because a bird eats it and then another tree comes. So you take away that chance of another apple tree. But when you offer it to Krishna, then not only becomes the apple spiritualized, it becomes actually spiritual food, but also the karma, the price you have to pay for taking away the apple from the cycle of nature or from Mother Nature, you get absolved of that because you offer it to Krishna, and he can take away that karma because you offer it to him, because he is in charge. So it's two things. It's one thing is you spiritualize the food by offering. It's also an act of love, because you're really actually, if you're pure, you really want to offer it to God, to Krishna. It's not even that you want to have the food. Because that's the understanding, because there are some incidents where the deity actually eats bhoga and there's nothing left.
Mm-hmm.
Usually this doesn't happen either, and God just eats with his eyes or with his ears or maybe even
when it disappears,
mouth.
Right?
Yeah, sometimes he actually eats it, you know, it disappears. But generally he can eat also with his eyes and it becomes spiritualized. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains that you can taste the saliva of God, that he actually tasted it, but he can taste it with his eyes. So it becomes actually transformed. It's not subjective. It's actually, you can also do a test. We never really did it, but they say the prasadam stays good longer than non-offered food.
Mm-hmm.
So it will rot not as quick as a normal apple. I never tested it, but we should test it. It's not like a scientific experiment.
Mm-hmm.
So. So you get spiritualized and also you get absolved of the karma. The karma is not counted because you offer it to God. So it's not that what Prabhupada
but also that you get karma from it if you don't offer it. It's two sides.
What? Is that a good side?
There's two sides. One side is the spiritual side, that it transforms into a spiritual food. And the other side is that you don't get the karma, because God owns the apple tree. It's his tree. So if you offer it to him, then it's not karma, because you give it to him. And then the remnants, then you can take. That is remnant, that is called, the prasadam is called mercy.
Mm-hmm.
So this is his mercy, that he says, I'm not eating all of it, you can honor it now. You can
mm-hmm.
it. And it's therefore also, you never walk over prasadam when there is a plate of prasadam. You never walk over. Generally also, usually the devotees, when they see each other, they bow down. So when you eat prasadam, that is generally not done, because the prasadam is not different from God.
Mm-hmm.
So then you have to respect the prasadam. And it's explained like when you're with the king, then you shouldn't pay respect to the other nobles, because
mm-hmm.
it's disrespectful towards the king. The attention should go towards the king.
Mm-hmm.
You can pay respect when the king leaves the room, you know, but before that you should not pay respect, because it takes away from the attention of the king.
Mm-hmm.
So similarly, when you take the prasadam, and let's say for instance a sannyasi walks in, and generally you need to bow down for, but during prasadam that is not done, because
mm-hmm.
you have to, the prasadam is considered higher, because
mm-hmm.
you have to honor it. It's kind of a subtle point, but generally it's followed. And it's gone. So you can pay your dandavats after you take the prasadam.
And in case with Prabhupada staying here, is this a sannyasi coming? But,
I always wondered about that.
But it goes from every island, right?
That the problem is it takes a special position. I always wondered about that.
Yeah.
I tell you honestly, this is a very little bit of a controversial point. First of all, Prabhupada, he installed the pictures of himself. You know, he allowed us to worship his picture on the Vyasasana. And he actually instructed his disciples to put his murti on the altar, like it's done in Krishna Balaram Mandir. You know Krishna Balaram Mandir, Bhaktisiddhanta and Prabhupada, they're on the altar. Remember Gauri Thami? So in Mumbai also, there's Gauri Thami deities and there's Prabhupada and Bhaktisiddhanta. They're sitting on the altar, it's a marble deity. So that's what Prabhupada instructed us to do, to worship him like that. The way we're doing it, he kind of mentioned it, but it was never really discussed in detail with Srila Prabhupada, as far as I know. He kind of mentioned it, so it's not that he didn't allow it, but it wasn't. It seems to me that it's a little bit of a gray area, and not many people know exactly what is the, how, you know, we never really discussed it, I feel.
Right.
And then, of course, right after Prabhupada left, and now it gets even more controversial. Then we had the whole Acharya era, wherein, you know, gurus took even more elaborate worship than Srila Prabhupada. So then the whole thing got kind of mixed up. And after that, this particular point, it was never really addressed, I feel. And it's good that we've discussed it now, because I just remember tomorrow we have a special class at 6 o'clock by His Grace Mother Saita Prabhu. He's the GBC together with Vida Chaitanya. Of this yatra, Benrich yatra. And it will be about, which is kind of related to this in one sense, about the Diksha Guru, the president, and you know, the managers, how they should cooperate together. Because in the past, this also went a bit wrong, and it's related to what I just discussed. So you can see that now in 2013, it took them that long to come with these resolutions to work this particular subject out. So this could maybe be the next topic, because they're discussing it now. They're discussing what this founder Acharya means, what is the position of Srila Prabhupada, they have the Prabhupada's position committee. Of course, we're also working in Vanipedia, you know, on Prabhupada's Pani. So these things, there are, I think it needs to be crystallized still. It's not 100% clear. So it's a very good question, and we need to discuss it, that question.
Yeah. It's like this.
Yeah, that will be tomorrow. at 6, so yeah. Please come. This is very important.
I love to have a on Friday, half an hour.
I will try to record it.
Thank you.